So some events that are mentioned often in the pooling clauses themselves, like what authorizes the lessee to pool, they will actually mention conservation or proper development. They're usually very favorable to the lessee and allow the lessee in whatever his prudent operations are to use the pooling authority. But some may be more specific and have a more specific standard. So again, and I'm going to say this till you're tired of hearing it, you've really got to read each provision carefully. You'll also find when you're reading these provisions carefully, or you're reading the entire lease and trying to pull together what is the complete meaning of the pooling clause, that you're going to run into some inconsistencies, which can be maddening. I ran into one just yesterday that the standard was that you could pool, but only for the minimum acreage necessary for the fullest, for the maximum allowable. The minimum acreage for the maximum allowable. Maddening, just with that alone. Then later on, there was a more global notion of what the proper exercise of the pooling authority was under that lease, and it was to allow the operator to drill the most wells. Well, by definition, you can drill more wells on a pooled unit than on separate leases because you don't have to observe lease lines for spacing purposes. So I don't know what you do with that language. And you're going to run into a lot of that kind of exciting puzzling when you're working on interpreting pooling clauses. I have in the next several slides a pretty typical pooling clause. This one just simply sets out, and I tried to bold in the language the most important parts, but it typically starts out by granting the lessee the right to pool, but carefully stating that there's no obligation to pool. A part or interest of the lands covered by the lease with other lands and leases. The next part is often a specific statement of how large a pooled unit can be, whether it's for an oil well or a gas well, or whether it's for a vertical well or a horizontal well or some combination. And then there's typically, not always, but typically what we call a governmental authority provision, and that's what's bolded at the end of this page, allowing larger units than the stated ones in the lease paragraph to be formed if there is a reason for it under the applicable rules and regulations of the governmental authority. Typically in Texas, that's going to be the Railroad Commission. The next part of the lease talks, or the pooling clause rather, typically indicates that more than one, this authority can be exercised more than once, more than one unit can be formed. It sets forth what steps have to take place for the pooling to become effective. Typically that's recording the pooling declaration, pooling agreement, declaration of unit. There's many different titles for them, but it typically has to be recorded. It may also set forth what the effective date would be, or it may allow some latitude for the operator to determine that defective date. Very important part of the pooling language is that it states, and this is toward the end of this page, that the operations conducted on any part of the unit will be deemed, except for the payment of royalties, to be operations conducted on the land subject to this lease. And particularly in the vertical well days, when you would have one tract that would hold the well and the other tracts would all be non-drill site, very, very important that you had that operations provision so that you are, in fact, conducting operations or deemed to be conducting operations on all tracts, whether they are drill site or non-drill site. The next portion of the clause shown on this slide talks about how the production is allocated to the individual tracts or leases covering those tracts within the pooled unit, and again, is typically a surface acreage allocation. This very same lease I was reading last night gave you the lovely double standard of you should allocate on the basis of the horizontal length on the tract from this lease to the total horizontal length of the well, or the surface acreage ratio, whichever is more beneficial to the lessor. Well, that's great unless every lease you're pooling has that same language in it. So I don't know what you do with that. So, but more typically, you're going to see this acreage allocation standard. And last but not least, on this slide in bold, the bolded language is essentially what most people call a pew clause, which says that the operations of the well or operations within the pooled unit will only maintain the lease as to the acreage that is actually pooled into the unit. So if you have a 160-acre lease and you've pooled 80 acres into a pooled unit, if you have this language, this pew clause type of language, you're going to have to do something on that unpooled 80 acres in order to maintain the lease as to that unpooled acreage. Pretty typical. We use the term pooled interval. When we're talking about the pooled interval is whatever the unit designation states it to be. Most leases are silent on this. Some may put some restrictions on how large a pooled interval can be designated, but it typically means whatever the lessee has stated it to be. It may be surface to the bottom of a particular formation. It may be limited to a particular formation and from the Eagleford Formation, for example. And I think that the instinct is to, pool all the depths. Isn't that best? And it's not necessarily best. In fact, it can have some restrictions on your future development, and also it may not be authorized.